And I can see the ground now, I'm way too gone, way too gone. All right, legends, welcome back, dude, to yet another episode of Get Around Me. What a time it is to be alive, truly. Broadcasting live from the Melbourne Comedy Festival. My lord. Stand-up comedy happening all around me at this very moment. At 11 a.m. on a Wednesday for some reason, if you can wrap your head around that. But no, it's not that glamorous, just in the old Airbnb. Do have a little bit of a view of the skyline though, so that's kind of exciting. And the voice is starting to go a little bit. This could be, for anyone out there who likes a raspier version of Billy Darcy, a little bit more chiseled. This might be my voice if I had any trauma in my childhood whatsoever. This might be my voice if I... This might be my voice if I had my fair share of adversity, but I think when you have the free ride that Billy D has had in the previous 29 years, you don't get that natural grizzle in your voice that some of the trendier comedians may have. So I'm on the strepsils. I'm not sure what's in the strepsils. I'm not sure how many you're allowed to take in a day, but I haven't been able to feel my tongue for about 48 hours and I'm pretty dizzy. So not sure what's in those. Maybe a bit of a Nurofen cold and flu crossover there, but can't feel my voice. There's not much of it left, but the podcast stops for no one and we keep things moving along. And I'm here in the Airbnb. Update, you know, it was a turbulent start here at the Airbnb. No hot water in the shower. No kitchen sink altogether. We found out later the washing machine doesn't work, which makes sense because it was under the kitchen sink. So I dare say that was a 2-for-1 no-go there. But after some polite messaging to the hosts, a plumber came around, and in a very exciting twist, we now have a hot shower. Still don't have a washing machine, and maybe the weirdest part of all is the kitchen sink works now, but it's exclusively boiling water. So I'm not sure what the great man's done, but if you want to wash your hands or potentially a vegetable in our kitchen sink, you can, but I would suggest you really get after it. You've got about 7 seconds before that becomes a trip to the emergency room. So things are looking up a little bit here at the Airbnb. Good for morale around the pad. Freddie said he didn't resent me, even though I could tell that he did. So good to see the boys having a nice hot shower before we head off to our shows. And I don't want to be a negative Nancy or whatever, but as far as Wim Hofing it up, I wouldn't say Melbourne is necessarily the town for it. You know, you jump out of your ice cold shower, you're ready to go, and then you walk out into 15 degrees drizzling rain. So do you know what I mean? How's the inflammation levels in Melbourne? Because there's not really any warmth in sight. But regardless, thanks so much to everyone who's come to the show so far here in Melbourne. 6 down, 5 to go. So come on out. Show's cranking along, really enjoying doing it. Like I said after the first show, I can now actually say that it's my best show ever. Whereas before the first show, that was a marketing ruse. I really wasn't too sure. But the show's cranking along. I'm really enjoying doing it. I was closing on this referendum bit I've been doing the first few shows, and now I'm no longer doing that. Really, turns out it's quite a big risk to sort of vibe out the political views of your crowd at the 53-minute mark, so that's in the middle of the show now. But apart from that, dude, my God, I'm having a bloody good time. Shout out to Grossi, who gave me and Rowan some bud the other day. Appreciated. And yeah, it's been really good. I feel grateful, like, that the crowds just... I feel like you guys get me these days, which is good. It's a pleasure to play for people who actually like you, which is not the majority of stand-up comedy gigs, so I appreciate that. Also, just a bit of an update for the rest of the tour. I'm going to Perth next weekend. That's starting to fill up. But then the weekend after, I'm going to Brisbane for 2 shows. First show sold out. Second show only has 10 tickets left. So get around that. If that's what you're into. The streets are alive here. I don't know if you can hear that siren. Freddie must have told a particularly edgy joke at a cafe around the corner, and they've sent in the PC police to grab him. But I can never tell what comes through on the microphone or not, but I'll be seriously surprised if that hasn't come through. I mean, that's as loud as it gets. These stained glass windows from like the 1800s in this Airbnb, you know, they're not great for noise, but I don't really care. when you've just been given the privilege of hot water, you can't really complain about soundproofing. So Brisbane, yeah, there's only 10 tickets left to the second show, so come along if you're keen for that. Then I got Adelaide the next night, and there is a fair amount of tickets available for that show. Then I got Canberra, Sydney, Newcastle, Wollongong. Show some desperation in Sydney. Everywhere else, you know, take your time. Buy when you can. You can get those tickets via the show notes of this podcast or via the link in my Instagram bio. It's been a good time. I really enjoy Melbourne. A lot of goths here. I don't know if it's just the weather. I'm not sure what comes first in Melbourne. The weather or the goths? The goths or the weather? Because there's just so many goths here. Everyone's just wearing black. Everyone's very pale. And sometimes you'll see like this indie goth chick who looks so hot and you're like, wow, there's just a different brand of woman down here in Melbourne. My God, what an absolute gothic angel walking towards me. And then you get a little bit closer and you realize it's a bloke. So who knows, dude? There's just so many androgynous tens down here who haven't felt happiness in about 6 months. And it's exciting, you know? It's exciting. But I think the Melbourne weather, right? Like I'm recording right now. I wish I could do some sort of a visual pop-up. It's just like drizzling, so grey and dark and cold, right? But I think it actually makes the people that live here quite grateful, quite humble. You know, people in Melbourne, it hits 19, they're running for the door. They're out there. They're getting into their activities. They're supporting the arts. They're going to the AFL. Dude, we're living right next to the MCG, and the games over the weekend, the streets were just filled. Every single person wears a scarf to the AFL, which I didn't realize. In the NRL, if you're to wear merchandise to the game, it indicates that you're willing to spill blood in the car park afterwards. If someone else's merch doesn't match the colors of yours. But here in Melbourne, everyone is wearing merch and there appears to be very little stabbings. So that's very exciting. And I think, yeah, Melbourne people, they get out and about. You want to meet someone from Melbourne, they're out there. They're accessible. Sydney, we are absolute cowards with the weather. In Sydney, if it hits like 21 and it's kind of cloudy, blokes will skip your wedding. You know, your best mate from primary school through thick and thin, he's seen you at your worst, your best. If it goes below 18, you're probably, do you know what I mean? He might say works on. So I think the weather here makes the people extremely grateful for their time outside when they are afforded it. And the mornings are bizarre. I don't know when the morning is really, because in Sydney, like the vibe outside in Melbourne at 8 a.m. feels like maybe 4 a.m. in Sydney when like just a skerrick of sunlight has hit the day. Like I woke up the other morning, I thought it was like 5 a.m. There's no light. There's very little light available. I sleep in for an extra 2 hours. I wake up, it's midday. Like you cannot tell the time of day from the light. In Sydney, the sun will do a lot of the heavy lifting with letting you know when it is, in fact, time to get up. When it is daytime and when it is nighttime. Melbourne, unless it's sort of midday to 2 p.m. or midnight to 2 a.m., it's almost up in the air. You don't really know what's happening in this town. It's very ambiguous. There's a lot of goths around. They don't help the whole nighttime-daytime distinction because they don't give a fuck. Just a couple more Melbourne observations. I'm wondering if these are even worth saying now that I'm talking out loud. And I can't really... I can't afford to fluff around too much on this one, team. My voice, it has a finite capacity to it. So I was just thinking that sunlight thing was probably shithouse and I've wasted 4 minutes of my voice. So that is unfortunate. But I will say this, dude, the public holiday surcharges in Melbourne over the Easter long weekend. Is this what Jesus died for, right? A bloke sacrifices himself for the good of all humanity. The reward for this sacrifice, the reward for a man literally getting metal spikes through his fucking wrists, yeah? The reward for all of this is it's like a $5.40 surcharge on Easter Saturday for a pint. I paid, right? And I know I've carried on about the cost of living. So I'm going to get in and I'm going to get out of this. That's a promise. I paid $17.50 for a pint of Carlton Draft on Easter Saturday. Now, the bloke who served it was about 19, and I knew while he was the face of the problem, he wasn't necessarily the cause. So obviously, I did not take it out on him. I said, geez, mate, you know, I'd start, you know, start tapping the foot. I go, oh, 17.50, yep, okay, right. Fucking hell, mate, they don't miss you around here. Jesus. And he was like, yeah, sorry about that, mate. And I could tell that I was like the 23rd person to make this comment that day. And I said, anyway, mate, you know, all's fair in love and war. And I left. But it's like, to be honest, mate, for Carlton Draft, if we're going past the $16 mark, that's really, that's ICAC stuff. That's a government review of corruption in the beer industry at that point. Like this surcharge, I don't know. I know you got to pay the guys double time or whatever. The kid's 12. What's he on regularly? 11 an hour? Now he's on 22? Do you know what I mean? Like he's probably making more than me today. I was off to do a stand-up comedy show to 60 people. This kid's on triple time and a half on Easter Saturday and I'm wearing the brunt of it. What is this America all of a sudden where I'm paying his wages? I'll get out of that as promised. But I will say, dude, Melbourne is feeling... And feel free to let me know if this is a crap take. I will say Melbourne is potentially feeling the most methy I've ever felt it. First night of the festival, or second night I should say on the Thursday, Festival Club opens up. Two separate comedians were absolutely climbed into by methed up homeless blokes. Two comedians got the shit beaten out of them first night of the Festival Club. So some of these homeless guys are feeling a little bit West Coast in the Melbourne CBD at the moment. I had to double check I wasn't in Northbridge, you know. So feeling pretty methy. I was in the 24-hour subway the other night, as is my right. And, you know, sorry, this is pretty embarrassing. But yes, I was getting a footlong pizza sub at 2:30 a.m. on a Thursday morning, okay? It's called going on holiday. How about you try it? So I'm in there and it's like just the methiest guy comes out and he's talking to himself and he's sweating and he's shivering. I really prioritize my safety. Or I should say I prioritize my safety below the pizza sub because I the whole time I'm ordering, I've just got the methiest guy breathing down my neck. And I'm honestly like, just fucking keep it together, homie. I'm going to be out of here in 2 minutes with this sub running for my life. Please do not assault me in front of the salad section. I must tell her I want everything except tomato. You know what I mean? I risked it all for this sub. So keep your wits about you in the Melbourne CBD. I'll say that. Two comedians hit already. One deserved it. One didn't. And it's all happening, dude. It's all happening. But the show's been going good. I'm at my beloved Cooper's Inn once again. I got John Cruickshank downstairs from me. If you don't know John Cruickshank, he's probably the best stand-up comedian in Sydney or one of. Sickest kind of live, really. And anyway, John Cruickshank, right? He's like a middle-aged skater with head-to-toe tattoos. And all of his fans are skaters. Skaters of all ages, really. He just owns the skating demographic. There's no comedian on the East Coast who pulls in more skaters than John Cruickshank. And we're on at the same time. And mate, every night, without fail, like 20 minutes into my show, like stone skaters, like three or four of them will roll in, thinking I'm John Cruickshank, stay for 7 minutes and then get up and leave, like completely interrupting the show. You know, it's not malicious. And I know they are looking for the right room, but it's like, I don't mind them popping their head in and being like, oh, that's clearly not John Cruickshank and leaving. Brother, if it's taking you 8.5 minutes of Billy Darcy stand-up comedy to work out that I am not, in fact, tattooed skateboarder John Cruickshank, then I would argue that maybe, just maybe, you're not the biggest John Cruickshank fan. Even if you are mildly into John Cruickshank, even if you just saw his picture on the Melbourne Comedy Festival website, you should be able to just crane your neck into the room and after a gentleman's 4 seconds know that whoever I am, you don't have to know who Billy Darcy is. You just have to know that I'm not John Cruickshank. I think that's fair enough. Okay? So I've got a lot of confused skaters popping in and out. Great to have them for the few moments we do. And it's been all happening. I immediately slide back on the rolly cigarettes upon arrival to Melbourne. There's something about this city, it just vibes so well with the rollies. And I think it kind of makes me look a little bit cooler at the artist bar. I was telling some of the other comedians I have multimedia in my show, even though I don't. In a bid to appear more three-dimensional, I thought, yeah, I'm clicking away. I got a telly in there. Maybe win an award or something, but hasn't really worked out. And it's been really fun, man. The artist bar is great. It's basically the Max Watts in Melbourne. And there's this upstairs viewing area that's only for comedians. And then there's like a downstairs live area where they have like music and comedy and stuff. And the glass is soundproof. So you can carry on in the viewing area without interrupting the show, which is so sick because all comedians at the back of shows just want to talk. No one wants to watch the show. So soundproof glass is pretty much the smartest thing you could ever do. I tell you what, it is absolutely hammering down here in Melbourne. Freddie's gone out for a walk, so that is unfortunate, brother. But anyway, yeah, me and Freddie have had some big nights. Rowan's been in the mix down here as well. Thursday night, we're out till like 3. That was a shocker because then you got the whole long weekend ahead of you. So that was unfortunate. Friday, like biggest night ever. I will say, and Luke Heggie actually already has a hilarious bit about this, but you know, when I used to do Trend End and this sort of stuff, Fun Fears, people would always send in taking a shit in a nightclub. And, you know, it is tough. It is unfortunate. You don't want to do it, but sometimes you have to. I will say, dude, forget taking a shit in a nightclub. The new fear is taking a shit in a gender-neutral bathroom in a nightclub. My God. You know, I've been candid. My diet since I've arrived in Melbourne has been potentially suboptimal. And I found myself in the position of having to take a shit the other night. And it's gender-neutral bathrooms only. Mate, when you are absolutely destroying a toilet and you can hear the girlies at the sink outside chatting away, it is a fear and social anxiety like no other, you know? Jesus Christ. You just come out looking the most sheepish a man has ever looked in his life. So embarrassing, dude. And next time I have to take a shit in a, whatever you call, like a non-gender-neutral bathroom, I'm going to be fucking reading the paper, catching up on Woman's Day or whatever. I'm going to be hanging out knowing that who gives a fuck what any of these grubby blokes in this bathroom think of me. You come out and there's, you know, attractive women chatting away, waiting to use the very same toilet you have just absolutely destroyed. Mate, that is head down, shameful stuff. I'll tell you that for free right now. My God, I have a new lease on life when it comes to taking a shit in a nightclub. Dear God, if you have to take a shit in a gender-neutral bathroom in a nightclub, guess what, brother? Your night's over, okay? Order the Uber. Order the Uber and return to your Airbnb because what you're about to do in this thing is completely unethical. So anyway, biggest night ever on Friday. Huge, really. I actually have not seen Rowan since. He went down sick after Friday night. He's house sitting in the suburbs for like his cousin or something. So I honestly have not seen him since Saturday or whatever. So God knows how he's going. Freddie was blowing up on Saturday because he couldn't find his boots. He reckons me and Rowan stole his boots, which is a pretty crazy thing to accuse us of. Turns out they were in the washing machine, right? He was furious about it. While I denied it vehemently, however you say that word, I think it's pretty obvious it was either me or Rowan. I mean, neither of us remember getting home, and that's that. So, anyway, a couple more highlights. Firstly, we had some celebs in the building that the Cooper's in, right? Cooper's in, place to be. There's a vibe around it. I come out of a show the other night. Guess who's sitting there? I don't know. Maybe you've heard of them. Sorry, guys. Maybe you've heard of these two. Jesus Christ. Maybe if you've ever woken up in a bed in Australia, you might have heard of these two. These two celebs, okay? I come out of a show at the Cooper's Inn. Bam! Kerry Bickmore and Tommy Little sitting there having a schoon. Unbelievable scenes, dude. Kerry Bickmore dressed to the nines, just schooning on at the Cooper's Inn. I love it. I can't get enough of it. Supporting, I should say, a fantastic pub. Tommy Little's there. There was no altercation between me and him. There was a line of security guards surrounding us both at all times. Obviously, referring to our previous beef, but our previous beef that's definitely real. And yeah, dude, still yet to meet Tommy Little, but my God, it's an honor I look forward to each and every day. And yeah, dude, just great to have some celebs in the building, you know? But I'm the worst judge of character, dude. This story is, I don't know if this is funny, but this is kind of something that happened the other night. So I'm at one of these like pizza by the slice places at like 1 a.m. or whatever on Saturday night, I think. And I'm sitting there, you know, I'm waiting for my pizza to come by the slice, as it were. And I'm sitting out the front there, and I've had a few beers, and nothing too weird, though, because I had the massive night the night before. So, just looking to get this slice and head home. Homeless bloke walks past on his bike. He goes, "Oh, brother, do you have any spare change to buy me a slice?" And shout out to every homeless guy in 2024. I'll speak for everyone when I say that none of us have any cash ever. Okay? You boys need to get those PayPass tap things or something. I would love to help you, but I do not have any cash on me, unfortunately. And he goes, I'm like, "Sorry, brother, I don't have any cash." He goes a bit further down the road and I go, "Ah, Jesus Christ, what are you doing, Darcy? You cold, heartless piece of shit. How do you wake up in the morning? You think just because you had a beer three tables away from Tommy Little, you're above helping your fellow human? You make me sick, okay? I can't even look at you at night, Billy Darcy." So I go, "Fucking hell, mate. Sorry about that. Let me shout you a slice." The bloke comes back over and he's kind of a rough character. We got a couple of face tattoos, this sort of stuff, but he's only like 35. And, you know, quick vibe check, little methy, but not too methy, you know? Potentially had done meth in the past, though I would have argued not on it currently. So he picks out a slice of pizza. He got himself the buffalo chicken, which was one of the premium slices. "You've gone from $6 to $8.50. Don't worry about it, brother. I can afford to spend it." But, you know, me, myself, I got a pepperoni. So I just thought, you know, the guy who's paying for himself has got the pepperoni. That's one of the traditional slices that's in your traditional slice range. That's $7 a slice. I just think, you know, someone shouting you a slice, I'm not going to go, "Hey, mate, fucking load it up. Let's get some anchovies and shit on there." Who gives a fuck, you know? I'm probably looking for you to get a margarita in this situation. But whatever, dude, let's put it to the side. So now I start chatting to this bloke and he's a pretty good bloke. And he's fresh out the slammer jam, you know. And you guys know me. I'm from the streets. Everyone knows Billy Darcy comes from the streets. I ride for the streets ride for me. So I'm chatting to a guy who's fresh out of prison. I know about prison, guys, okay? I know about what goes on. Most people would shy away from this conversation. Think, "Oh, don't bring it up. Let's talk about something else." Well, I don't know if you've ever spoken to a guy with face tattoos who's fresh out of prison, but it's very hard to gauge what their other hobbies are. So anyway, I go, "Brother, fresh out the slammer jam. No stress, one for the streets, I understand. What you in for there, champion?" You know when someone brings up something heaps fucked up, but you act like you're cool and you know about that stuff? That's what I'm doing. So he goes, "Oh, dumb stuff, mate, dumb stuff." I go, "All good, mate, nothing I haven't seen before. What we chatting, yeah? Robbery? Drugs? What we chatting, hey? Me and you, mate. 2 P's, yeah? 2 P's. And he goes, "Oh, fucking stupid. Just this thing with my wife, yeah. Fuck, don't worry about it." And I go, "Oh, fucking hell. What the fuck have I waded into here?" And I go, "Oh, right. What's happened there, mate?" And he goes, "Oh, fuck, some crazy shit with my wife. I don't remember it." I go, "Fuck's sake." I go, "Mate, you've hit her. You've hit her, haven't you?" And he goes, "I don't remember it." And I go, "Okay, that might be enough of story time for today." So now, I'm just sort of sitting there in silence with this bloke who's fresh out the slammer jam for bashing his wife. And I'm really regretting buying him the premium slice, to be honest. The buffalo chicken comes out. It's fucking steaming hot. My pepperoni is moist. It looks like shit, dude. And then we sort of just eat a slice of pizza in silence. I absolutely scoff mine and say, "All right, mate, well, you know, best of luck. I kind of wish you mentioned you bashed your wife before I shouted you a meal. But as Ben Cousin said, such is life." So once again, I've endorsed another absolute psychopath through my kindness and I can only apologize. Okay, a couple of things I'd like to talk about here. And this podcast, I've never had a news cycle that I'm so excited to talk about. You know, I like Australiana sort of B-list celebrity stories, or A-list as well, but I like my celeb news to be Australian-focused. I enjoy a good celeb tale when it involves an Aussie. And this week, dude, we have just got Aussies taking shots at Aussies all over the map. It's so exciting. Firstly, Captain Sunshine Mitch Johnson has picked up the pen once again in his role as attack dog for the West Australian. And this guy, when this guy tackles, he goes 2 feet in, studs up, Mitch Johnson. He's come out, right? 2 days ago, he's come out and said that Sam Kerr should be stripped of her captaincy as a result of covering up her legal issue in London. I sit here on a rainy day in Melbourne, worrying about Mitch Johnson's mental health. I worry about the quality of the sex he's having with his partner, how often he's having it. I mean, to be this angry on a day-to-day basis, this bloke must be down to birthdays and public holidays with the missus, because I don't know how anyone could possibly get this riled up about stuff that doesn't particularly seem to matter. I'm in for stuff that actually matters. And Mitch Johnson's topics that he blows up about just don't really. The Dave Warner stuff, even though he was carrying on like an absolute pelican, I get it because it mattered to him. It was a personal grievance. He later admitted it was totally a personal issue. And he misused his role as quote-unquote journalist to work through that. This one I can't wrap my head around at all. For Mitch Johnson just to cross-code, spray Sam Kerr, like he's not even a soccer player. Is this Mitch Johnson announcing to the world that he thinks he is a legitimate sports journalist and now no code is safe from his keen eye? No code is safe from his holier-than-thou judgment? I don't know, dude. And here's the thing. Sam Kerr covering up that she was arrested or charged with something in London. I mean, yeah, it's a conversation. She probably shouldn't have covered it up. But it happened a month ago, mate. Like, just tell me you had nothing to write about this week without telling me you had nothing to write about. And I'm always baffled by former players who have no empathy for current players. Surely Mitch Johnson has had a situation in his playing career where you thought, fuck, this has gone a bit awry. If I could just sweep this under the carpet, it's not really a big deal. That'd be best for my family, my job, you know, all of the above. But some former players, as soon as they take the boots off, they just immediately turn into like News Corp drone, just attacking these men and women. How many minutes has Mitch Johnson watched the Matildas, do you think? That would be my question on this one. Is Mitch Johnson like a ravenous Sam Kerr fan who was so shattered by the news of 3 weeks ago? It might have been a month ago. I can't even remember when it was. I was talking about it on the pod. It feels like a few episodes ago. Is Mitch Johnson such a ravenous Sam Kerr and or Matildas fan that he was so hurt and let down by the news that Sam Kerr had covered up these legal proceedings? I mean, I don't think it's going to go anywhere, this thing. It's going to be thrown out, but whatever. That it took him 3 weeks to process the news and finally write an article about it. Is that what we're actually saying here? Because I can't see that being the case. And it's like, Mitch, why don't you just try writing something positive? This is the problem with the clickbait culture. Why can't you just go ridiculous or funny or outrageously positive take? Or, you know, just do something crazy. It's so much harder to get these clicks not being an absolute cunt about it. Like, the bloke literally lost his Triple M commentary position because Candace Warner was like, yeah, I don't want to work with him. Like, brother, that's how unlikable Mitch Johnson is. The Triple M executives have gone, right, we need a cricket commentator for the summer, or the Ashes, I should say. Or the home summer it was, sorry. We need a cricket commentator for the home summer. It's between WAG, Candace Warner, and former all-time test great Mitchell Johnson. And Mitchell Johnson is such a curmudgeonous, unlikable prick that they went with Candace Warner. Like, come on, Mitch. Just have a day off, brother. You know? And I'm not sure you could be negative across codes. I've never seen a former player do this. Can you imagine if, like, I'm trying to think of an opposite version. Can you imagine if Harry Kuehl came out just spraying Steve Smith about something? Surely everyone's first reaction would be like, hey, Harry Kuehl, shut the fuck up, yeah? Dude, if I was playing soccer for Australia and some guy who bowled fast for Australia in cricket 20 years ago, 10 years ago, was like, oh, Billy Darcy shouldn't do this, I'd be like, who the fuck is that guy? Do you know what I mean? And also, on the totem pole of Australian iconography, Mitch Johnson must be 3 to 4 rungs below Sam Kerr. Sam Kerr's in the troposphere, the Cathy Freeman echelon, you know? I'm trying to even think of someone else who's on Sam Kerr's level. Who would be the cricketing equivalent of Sam Kerr? I don't know if I can even think of someone. I honestly don't know if I can even think of someone who's as iconic from the world of cricket as Sam Kerr is across the greater sporting spread. Do you know what I mean? Stay in your weight class, Mitch, would be my recommendation. If Mitch Johnson wants to have a go at someone, that's fine. But if we're going to stay in our weight class, he should be having a go at like former Socceroos left back Scott Chipperfield. That might be a little bit more in your pay grade, Mitch, than taking on Australian cultural and sporting icon Samantha Kerr. Do you know what I mean? Okay, I'm sorry if that got a little negative. But I just am having a tough time wrapping my head around how Mitch Johnson, a guy with a sleeve and a tongue ring, could possibly be so negative on a day-to-day basis. Anyway, up next, it has come to my attention recently that it turns out Robert Irwin is apparently 5'7". I have no following comments on this, but I was pretty shocked to hear it. You know when someone's so good-looking, you just assume they're like 6 foot? You know when someone's so hot from the waist up, you don't even question what's happening from the waist down? You think it keeps going, you know? You see a guy as good-looking as Robert Irwin, you think, waist down, no further questions. He's 6 foot with an absolute hog. Tools down, lads, you know? You don't even think to question it. But it turns out he's 5'7", which makes the way he has captured the hearts of this nation even more impressive, I would argue. To have such a hold on the hearts of the men and women of this country at 5'7", looking up at the people who have such a crush on you, wow. It just speaks to his charisma, his jawline, his beautiful pearly whites, you know? Even more impressive, I found out while Googling Robert Irwin's height that he got paid $450,000 to host I'm a Celebrity, Get Me Out of Here for 6 weeks. My God, that kid kills it, dude. What is in the future for Robert Irwin? Like, I honestly think he has unlimited potential. Dear God, dude. Dear God. Anyway, no further comments on that. I got two more stories I want to talk about, and then we'll do the project. So this one was brought to my attention by a couple of the lads after one of the shows. In fact, multiple lads after a couple of different shows. This Brisbane Lions cheating scandal. And I looked it up online. There's not that much media attention about it. So I would like to state that this is something I have heard from two blokes in the same pub over two separate nights. So if this is wild defamation, I can only apologize. This is alleged, and I'm not sure if it's true or not, but this is just something I heard, and there's a couple of articles about it, so it's probably true. Anyway, the Brisbane Lions go to Vegas right on a boys' trip. The WhatsApp group, you know, you go to Vegas, first thing you do is start a WhatsApp group. I understand that. You've got the T-Mobile SIM in. You've got unlimited data for the next 3 weeks. You get the WhatsApp group up, and the boys are ready to go. Anyway, the WhatsApp messages have loaded up on one of the boys' computers at home, you know, via the iCloud. The Apple monitor in the family home is lit up. The messages have come through and they're quite debaucherous. They're detailing various drugs, women, strippers, sex, drugs and rock and roll, etc. A little bit of cheating going on, you know, a few of the boys with wives and long-term partners back home. They're playing up. AFL boys on the strip, you know, tell me something I don't know. Is water wet? Is the sky blue? Well, in Melbourne, it's not, dude. But yeah, so basically it's come through on the WhatsApp chat back home that a few of the lads are playing up deluxe. The wife who's seen the messages has alerted the other partners. And now the Brisbane Lions are 0-3 to start the season. A few of the lads getting divorced. One of them is confirmed getting divorced. And it sent ripples through the club and they're in shambles. So first, a couple of thoughts on this. Firstly, whoever's messages have leaked to the computer back home, trade him immediately. Trade him immediately. When you front the media, just say it's a cultural thing. This guy's a cunt. Come on, mate. Australia is a country of freedom. It's a country where everyone can do what they want when they want. And those freedoms are extended when overseas. So here's the deal, dude. I'm not going to endorse cheating. I'm not going to endorse cheating on the mother of your children. You know what I mean? Secrecy, lies. These are not things we endorse here at Get Around Me. What I will endorse is your freedom to do those things on your own time without me fucking sending a letter via messenger pigeon back to your partner back home, okay? I think that whatever you get up to is your business and whatever I get up to is mine, and let's leave it at that. This bloke has to go. And it's 2024. You can't jump on the bus the next day and say, fucking hell, lads. Who knew the iCloud backed everything up, you know? This isn't 2012. We're not looking at Jennifer Lawrence's nudes for the first time going, fucking hell. Right, so this is how the cloud works. That is absolutely inexcusable from this bloke. I can't help you. I absolutely cannot help you when it comes to this iCloud thing. Like, you have to be traded immediately, mate. Anyway, they're 0-3. The vibe around the group is no doubt horrendous. I assume Bay 13 at the MCG are going to be all over this when the Brisbane Lions go down there. And they fucked this so hard, dude, because at least the other blokes, if they weren't included on the messages, the fact that it's a group chat that's uploaded is absolutely egregious. I'm honestly surprised one of these boys didn't just upload a sex tape directly to their Instagram story. The way AFL and NRL players have such little grasp of who can and cannot see what is or isn't on their phone. Like, do you know what I mean? I would just be way more cautious if I was a famous person cheating on my long-term partner overseas. But anyway, the ambulance that went past kind of fucked my rhythm on that one. Moving on to the next story. Up next. Okay, this one's... Jesus Christ, dude. It's a long solo episode, and I'm running out of voice. Last story. Rebel Wilson is in the news. You might be thinking, why is Rebel Wilson in the news so much recently? Why, despite no acting credits of any kind recently... Oh, that's not true. I think she was in a Netflix film. But why, despite the fact she is working in film and television less than ever, why is she in the news more than ever? It's a fantastic question, guys. Well, the answer is that Rebel Wilson, like all celebrities, just past the peak, you know? She's still on the top of the mountain, Rebel, but she's coming down and she knows it. Bam. Time to do a book. And what do you need to do to market any book worth its salt? You simply must drag anyone and everyone you have ever met who has more than 17 Instagram followers. So she's employing the same strategy as Jada Pinkett Smith did a few months ago to flog a few of these books off. And here we fucking go, dude. And Rebel Wilson, I would argue, 10 years ago, national treasure, right? I was a massive Rebel fan. You know, she's in Bridesmaids, dude. She was hilarious in Bridesmaids. She was in so many films during that era, like 2010 to 2015, 2005. I'm making these dates up. But she was in so many good films, dude. She was so funny. And now the vibes have been off with Rebel for a few years now. Things have not been going that great for her. And when she does pop up in the media, instead of thinking, oh, fucking hell, did you see what Rebel Wilson said on Jimmy Fallon? That's hilarious. It's a lot of, okay. Interesting you've said that, whatever. But anyway, I mean, is it possible to promote a book with stories from said book that don't trash someone? Are there any stories in the book that are interesting without dragging the name of a Hollywood elite? I'm not sure. I'm yet to see a celebrity attempt it. I mean, I read the Matthew Perry book and he was doing drive-bys on Keanu Reeves every third page. So this obviously works. Look at me, I'm talking about it now on one of Australia's premier cultural podcasts. And here we go. So, first up, Sacha Baron Cohen. She said that Sacha Baron Cohen was a fucking creep and all this. And it came out that Sacha Baron Cohen was like, I completely refute these claims. Look, I think we can all agree that if you were on the set of Bruno or Borat or one of these films in the mid-2000s with Sacha Baron Cohen, there probably some weird stuff happened. I'm going to have to jump on Team Rebel on this one to a certain extent. I'm sure Sacha Baron Cohen's a great guy, but I think we can all agree that the bloke who was swinging his dick around in every second scene of Bruno potentially might be throwing some wild ideas around the production meeting. So that one remains to be seen. But then she comes out and she trashes Paulie Fennick from Fat Pizza. Now, if you don't know Fat Pizza, it was quite a popular SBS sitcom from maybe 10, 15 years ago. And this one I have a harder time understanding because Sacha Baron Cohen, you know, he's a massive name and I understand it would garner a lot of attention trashing him. Is this really going to be moving a lot of books worldwide, trashing ethnic comedian Paulie Fennick? He said that all of the jokes about her on the show were fat phobic and that she just had to wear the brunt of it, take all the fat jokes on her double chin, as she put it in the book, which is, I can only imagine, an example of some of the hilarious jokes that are contained within. And apparently, Paulie Fennick went up to her at the Melbourne Comedy Festival and said, you try too hard or something. And this one's a little tougher to swallow, I think, because I think it's fair to say that pretty much every joke regarding Rebel Wilson in a scene from the mid-2000s was probably fat-phobic in nature. I would argue that fat-phobia was invented in maybe 2017. So tough to go after a 2008 SBS4 sitcom. Do you know what I mean? It's tough. It's tough to get behind this one. While they are fat phobic, it's kind of like stuff that was homophobic in 1993. Like, it's just kind of a sign of the times, you know? Now we look back and think, yeah, that was pretty fucking full on. But at the time, no one really knew any better. And I don't know, it seems a bit weird that at the time all this stuff was kosher, and now that maybe she's not getting the same amount of work, now that the phone's not ringing as much, all of a sudden she has a problem with some of these jokes. So Paulie Fenwick said, mate, get out of here with that. He said she's particularly ungrateful that Fat Pizza, the show in question, gave her a start in the entertainment industry, and she should be a little more grateful for it. So there you go from Paulie Fenwick. Who knows? And then the last one here, this one is by far the most ridiculous. Rebel Wilson came out and said that she's pretty sure Adele hates her because a couple of times they were in the same room and Adele did not say hi to her. Quote, as if her fatness might rub off on her. And she said that a lot of people often confused her and Adele as the same person. This one might be a little bit too big of a swing, Rebel. Honestly, Sacha Baron Cohen, bit of a freak. I think we could all go in on that one to a certain extent. Like I said, swinging the dick around, etc. Paulie Fenwick on Fat Pizza, who fucking knows? It was an SBS production in 2007. I don't think Paulie Fenwick has worked since. So those two are sort of inadmissible. The Adele one, saying that you think Adele hates you because she didn't say hi to you a couple of times. I'm not so sure you and Adele are in the same stratosphere. Rebel Wilson saying, why didn't Adele say hi to me, is kind of the same vibe as Mitch Johnson having to go at Sam Kerr. Do you know what I mean? Not necessarily in the same cultural weight class, I would think. I know that you had a few cameos in some Judd Apatow rom-coms, which we all enjoyed greatly. But I don't think that necessarily means that Adele herself, one of the biggest recording artists of the 21st century, is necessarily going to be pushing people out of the way to say hello to you. And just because you guys are both white and blonde, I don't think people were ever, under any circumstance, confused as to who was who between Adele and Rebel Wilson. I think this one's a little bit of a big swing, a little bit of a large bow to draw, as it were. So I can't really ride with Rebel on that one, unfortunately. And I don't know, dude. Like, it's fucking Adele. Can we agree that last one's ridiculous? It's Adele. If I was in a room with Adele and she didn't run over and say hi to me, I wouldn't be like, well, bitch alert. You know what I mean? Now, obviously, I'm nowhere near as famous as Rebel Wilson. Obviously, I'm not even famous. But I'm just saying that potentially a little window into the self-awareness of Rebel Wilson, that Adele didn't want to start a group chat with her off the rip, and she's thought, well, this chick's either an absolute cunt or a version of that, you know? But anyway, vibes have been off with Rebel a little bit recently. Like I said, it just seems to be like she's a celebrity first, a comedian second these days. Whereas when she like used to, I don't know, I remember when she went on Jimmy Fallon in a tracksuit and said like, she had like a diamond necklace that said bitch on it and stuff. I don't know. She was just so funny. I just thought she was so funny, Rebel. I was always pretty pumped to see her and stuff. And vibes have been off for a little while now. She came out with that tracksuit range a couple years ago that had no plus sizes. It only went to large, which, again, I don't give a fuck, you know. Do whatever you want with your tracksuit brand. But as someone who has campaigned tirelessly against fat phobia, it seemed like an odd move, to be honest, to turn around and then provide no options for your plus size friends. But she's doing live shows now, Rebel, as well. This is how you know an A-list celebrity is off the deep end, when they turn to stand-up comedy. Make no mistake that stand-up comedy is the gutter of the entertainment industry. That's why you see Jeremy Piven, ever since he got cancelled from Entourage, all of a sudden he's on stage telling a few yuck-em-ups, you know? So Rebel's doing a few live performances. That's never a good sign. And it's interesting how some people like, they like what they're doing as long as it suits them. Do you know what I mean? Like, all the fat jokes and all the roles she got, it was all kosher until all of a sudden she's not getting those roles and the money dries up, and now all of a sudden it's like, whoa, 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 I actually really disagree with everything that happened on the way up, you know. Well, it seemed fine. Do you know what I mean? When you were making millions of dollars, we didn't hear too much about it. It's interesting how people try to distance themselves from the thing that got them there. I think this about Jimmy Carr, when I listened to him be philosophical on podcasts, talking about the mindset of success and how he became one of the biggest stand-up comedians on the planet. How stand-up comedy should be taught in schools because it's such a precious art form, as if he hasn't spent the last 20 years telling riddles and knock-knocks written by someone else, you know? It's interesting once you get to the top of the mountain and you have a look around and you think, oh, not sure I'm vibing the particular path I took to get here. Might try and seem a little cooler now that I'm on top up here. But regardless, we wish Rebel the best, you know. I'd like to see her make a comeback. No hate here, but yeah, she's been a bit weird. And maybe have a look at it, babe. But anyway, finish this off here. It's time for the project. The project is the segment where we celebrate Australian talent killing it here and abroad. This one's great. A few people sent me this one. Wildcard surfer Ellie Harrison, straight out of Victoria, this chick, went on a tear at the Bells Beach Pro. And I love it. This one thing I love about surf comps is when a local wildcard just goes on a tear. You know, you're watching the Tahiti Pro and like some Tahitian guy who doesn't even have a driver's license and has been surfing the break since he was like 6 months old, like knocks out Kelly Slater. He doesn't speak English and no one knows his name. I love a local wildcard. And they're like, oh, he knows the break better than anyone. You know, this is his break. I think that's kind of what's happened here. Local high schooler. So I guess she's from the Bells Beach area, Ellie Harrison. First round, she knocks over world number one, Molly Picklum. Get that into you. I think Molly's Australian as well, but still, I'm not that into the surfing these days. Next round, she knocks over former champ, Tyler Wright. Get that into you, Tyler. Love Tyler as well, to be honest. I kind of wish she took down more internationals on the way up. But, dude, goes on a tear all the way to the quarterfinals, 18-year-old high school student, eventually lost to Johan DeFay in the quarters, which you hate to see. I don't really have much more to say about this other than that it's just fucking sick. Well done, Ellie, and just another Australian talent that's come out of nowhere who I look forward to watching over the coming years. I'm not that into the WSL these days, but I was a bit of a pig for it back in the day. Back in the heyday of, like, you know, your Taj Burrow, Mick Fanning days, Parco, and then you got, you know, Steph, Sally Fitz, Nicky Van Dyke. That was my era of the WSL. That was when I was really into it, you know? So potentially showing my age a little bit there, but well done to Ellie. This is so sick. And that is the project for this week. That is the podcast for this week. I have 5 shows to go at the Melbourne Comedy Festival. I would love for you to come out and see it if you haven't already. If you have seen the show, please tell your friends. I would really appreciate it. See you for a schooner after. And then I'm on to Perth, Brisbane, Adelaide, Canberra, Sydney, Newcastle, and Wollongong. And then that'll be me done for the year as far as touring. So if you would like to see me do my solo stand-up comedy show this year, you have an opportunity over the next 5 or so weeks to do so. You can get those tickets via the show notes of this podcast or via the link in my Instagram bio. So I hope to see you at a show. Thanks for listening to the pod. I really appreciate the support you guys give me, and it becomes more evident when I get to meet you guys after the show. So thanks again. Thanks for the memories. Miss you. Want to kiss you. Thanks for listening. Way too long, yeah, and I can see the ground now.